Welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. Today I've got my friend with me, Baron J. Littleton of the Baron J. Foundation, and he's the executive director and founder. Thank you so much for being with us, Baron J.
I'm so happy to be here, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
I've known you for we've known each other for years. I think you originally reached out when we had our just the consumer card program. And then I think now for at least probably 18 months or 2 years, something like that, you've also had the business credit card with us. So thanks so much for being in our community and really being an early adopter of a lot of the stuff that we've been doing over these past handful of years.
Thank you so much. Yes, I remember the credit card. It's an amazing thing because our credit limit started off at $5,000, and then within a year, we're now at $20,000. So it's been a pretty good ride. So I expect for it to go up again sometime this year to like 35. So who knows?
Well, no, I appreciate you sharing that. I mean, I think that that's the consistent theme that, we see daily, and, we're trying to make inroads in a small way now and hope to do it over time in the years and decades to come to really change how nonprofits access credit and other financial products. I'm always just curious. I mean, I'm learning here both through this podcast or wherever we take this conversation, but when you started the found from starting the foundation to where you are today and where you want to go, what has it been like working with traditional banks and why is it important for your foundation to grow the credit line?
It's been very challenging working with traditional banks. For some reason, they look at nonprofits that it's not like a real business. They kind of look at nonprofit like a stepchild or like a distant cousin. They're like, I don't know. But with your program, they look at us as a first cousin or a blood relative, and they really go far and beyond to extend credit and to work with you. And that's what they have done. I think we've been with them for at least less than 18 months, and we went from 5,000 to 20,000. So that's pretty good.
What's your perspective? And I'm sharing this. There's a variety of things that we can get into, but with everything that's happened, over the past year, I'm specifically talking about Black Lives Matter movement, and I'm seeing different companies obviously step up in different ways, right? Committing capital. One of the big things that's been really eye-opening to me is how challenging it is. We were talking about nonprofits in general, but people of color that are leading nonprofits from accessing credit and how marginalized people of color have been traditionally by banks. So, you had mentioned how nonprofits in general, right? People leading nonprofits can be looked at as a stepchild and marginalized, but it seems like the problem's even deeper when it's people of color that are trying to lead organizations. So I'm just curious, like, do you have any personal experiences with that and any thoughts about, sort of this aspect of leveling the playing field and making access to capital and banking services, easier for you and your peers?
It's challenging, but you just have to swing a lot of bats like baseball. You have to keep swinging, and then eventually you're going to hit the ball, you're going to get a base hit, you're going to get a home run, and eventually you're going to land with that particular bank or bank officer or community organization that's going to assist you. You just don't have the luxury of going up to the bat and you getting up there, you're going to hit a home run like Ken Griffey Jr. You're going to have to strike out many times before you get that home run. So you just have to look at it in that perspective. You can still get there, but you're going to have to do more swings than the regular person that has to do at the plate.
Well, it's look, I appreciate that perspective. I think, obviously perseverance and not quitting and giving up, is the hallmark of any successful person. But, I think it's bullshit that how stacked against, you know, the financial services industry is for people running nonprofits and people of color anyway. I mean, it shouldn't be that way, right? And so when I think about the world, you know, the vision that I have for the world and what I'm hoping to affect change, it's to flip that system, right? So people can work with us or work with other banks and not be marginalized or screwed over. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I appreciate your response, but I don't think it should be that way is what I'm getting at.
Right. It shouldn't be that way, but it is, and you get used to it. And sometimes you get used to it that you develop the scab or the sore where it doesn't really bother you anymore because that's what you're used to.
Fair. No, I appreciate you sharing that. So, you know, I want to talk with you about your foundation because one of the cool things about this podcast is just an opportunity to, you know, go deeper, right? With people that I've been able to meet over the past handful of years through the Charity Charge Network and community family. One of the things that really inspires me and motivates me of what I know about your work and the conversations we've had is that you took this big leap to go and start your own foundation. And I want to cover the specific areas, but I think what it really shows is how, you know, the capacity that we all have to give back and we can do it in different ways. Right. So you've decided and you've clearly, you know, integrated philanthropy and doing good and giving back to become a big area of your life, starting this foundation. But it's also people can join boards, people can just volunteer, people can donate money. So I'm curious, you know, for you to my first question to you is, what was it that motivated and inspired you to start the foundation in the first place?
What motivated me to start the Baron J Foundation is two things. Number one is that I was giving a lot to adults and helping them, and it wasn't appreciating the efforts and energy and resources I was giving them. So I decided that I should be giving to the youth because I was once the youth growing up in Detroit, and I benefited from a lot of public programs and different programs that came to my school, et cetera. So I said, you know what? Let me give back to the youth because they appreciate the work and effort more than the adults. Even though I still focus on adults, but 80% is focused on the youth and they appreciate it. And you water in a plant and you get to see them blossom over the years. So I wanted to give them a step up, like something that I received. So like different programs that I was a part of, I kind of reinvented those programs and made them better. Or no, there's also some programs that they didn't have that I created.
When growing up, as you reflect back, what were some of the programs that, you know, memories you have that really helped you and you know, had a lasting effect?
It was one program where they had different executives from corporate America that would come to school and mentor us. They would come during lunchtime. And they would talk with us. And sometimes they would come after school and talk to us and do homework with us. And occasionally throughout the school year, they would take us on different excursions, like to a Detroit Pistons game. I went to a Detroit Pistons game for the first time with my mentor. And that was very exhilarating. I still remember that. I still remember his face. I remember everything about him. He worked in computers at IBM. And I remember he took me to a game. We set up way in the rafters. And then the second time he took me, we sat on the floor. So those type of things made a difference in my life to be able to experience that.
That's awesome. I could see your face light up, you know, and I think it shows how, one, it's infectious because now I'm lighting up, you know, just thinking of that. But I think it really shows how important, you know, giving back, but specifically mentorship can be and the lasting effect that it can have on people. You know, for anyone listening, I think it's just amazing.
Yes, it is. And another mentor was Mr. Burton Mabin. He talked to us about accounting and finance, and he helped me get my first mutual fund, which was with Templeton Fund. Mm-hmm. And I was like 16. He came to my house and he sat down with my mother, and my mother opened up the account. She was custodian over it because I was only 16. And I believe I was putting like $25 a month into the account. My mother was putting like 25 as well. And I was able to put $25 a month because I was selling candy at school next to the vending machines. So he taught me about finance. And just imagine, you know, being taught about mutual funds at 16 and actually being able to open up one. Whereas I took advantage of that. I, you know, I told my mother and he came to the house and did it, but whereas most children probably did not. So I was very proactive. So those type of things really sparked the seed in me. And that's another reason why I love to give back and create programs for our youth.
And you're based at this point for the audience in Los Angeles. So can you talk to us specifically about some of the programs that the foundation's doing and sort of how would you describe the foundation to someone that's learning about it for the first time?
How I would describe the Baron J Foundation is like the Boys and Girls Clubs without walls, because we do our programming in the schools during classroom time. So our instruction is similar to like an elective that the students receive. Mm-hmm. So like when you think of Uber, they're like a taxi company that doesn't own any cars, where we're like the Boys and Girls Club, but we don't own any buildings because we do our programming at the schools. So that's how I like to describe the Baron J Foundation. And one of our programs that I'm very excited about is our Lunch and Learn program, 30-minute mentor. It's when we have executives from the community that would come to the school once a week and have lunch with a group of students. So the executive would come, sit down with them before their lunch period and talk to them about business plans. And then the next hour they go to lunch with that business executive at their school in their cafeteria where he sits down with them and eat their food, their cheese, burgers, their fries. So he's becoming them. And they get a chance to talk and ask questions about life, about business. So it's like, how many times do students get a chance to sit down with a business professional, whether that's a banking, a dentist, a doctor, a mail person, a person that owns the cleaners in their community. So it's a very effective program.
That's amazing.
Yes.
I don't know if you take guest visitors, but next time I'm in LA, I want to be a part of this. I'm sincere.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That would be awesome. You know, I have a similar experience in the sense when I think back of being motivated and inspired as a kid, I was always drawn towards entrepreneurship. And so the times that I had where I would interact, and I'm thinking of one in particular in school, two main experiences that have always stuck with me are events. One was when we were in the fourth grade, our fourth grade class was broken up into groups. I think it was four kids each. So there were three other kids. And then we were assigned to an alum of the school who had started a business. And the guy, I forget his last name. The last name was Blum. And he had started, it was called Rent-A-Wreck. It was a rental car company that regionally, I think had been pretty darn successful. And he was just such a nice guy. And then we were the only group that he followed up and sent us like hats and pencils and like notepads and rulers. He just sent us sort of like a swag bag of their like branded stuff. And I always just was like, wow, this guy really cares about us. I mean, it was such a little thing, but yes. When you're a little kid and like, you really appreciate getting little like gifts or trinkets or whatever. And I remember none of the other groups got it. And you know, one day we came in and our teacher said, here, Mr. Blum, like sent this in for you. And, you know, we felt so special. It was kind of the haves and the have nots because whoever the other mentors were for the other groups in the class, they didn't get anything. So we just felt so special. So that always stuck with me, you know, and it was a really good lesson in sort of, you know, how to follow up and how to make people feel special. And then I know this interview is very much about you, but you know, another moment I had was in sixth grade, we were tasked by our science teacher. We were doing a whole sort of module on for the month on sustainability and recycling. Yes. And we were told we could reach out to any CEO of any company, send them a letter that either talks about their recycling, if they're doing a good job, you know, tell them why. And if they're doing a bad job, critique them, you know, whatever you want. And I had just gotten a computer from our first Dell computer. And yes, it said that it was recycled, or the packaging was from recycled materials. So I sent a letter to Michael Dell. And about 3 weeks later, I got a letter back from Michael Dell, wow, plus a polo shirt. And it was like, you know, and I didn't know what I didn't know. I was 12, reaching out to the CEO of a big publicly traded company. And it just taught me that people are accessible, like just reach out, you know, to anyone.
Yes, we actually have done that exercise too several times with our students. It's a very effective exercise because most students don't believe that people outside their circle are accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is like the first part too. A lot of times now, like there is follow up. That one happened to get to him and he sent it back, right? So I just want to say, like, sort of to the kids and stuff, it goes both ways. Sometimes you send and you get it right back. Other times, right, like you were saying with the banks, you got to be persistent about whatever it is you want in life or whoever's, you know, attention you want to get. But anyway, yeah, just really, I can relate to what you're sharing. I love what you're doing.
Steven, that goes to a point when I was 15 years young. I wanted to become, I became bat boy for the Detroit Tigers, Major League Baseball team. I wanted to be a bat boy since I was 8 years old, but it didn't happen until I was 15. But I was persistent. And I had called the Detroit Tigers operator and say, hey, my name is Barron. I want to be a bat boy. Who do I need to talk to? So they put me in contact with Jim Shimako. I didn't know who he was. He was the equipment manager. And I spoke to him and he told me to write a letter. And I wrote a letter and my auntie helped me write it, Auntie Marguerite. And he got the letter and he wrote me back. And he told me all these qualifications that I need to have. I was like, wow, I got to have all this. And then I couldn't get in contact with him again. So I kind of gave up. And then I had a summer job working at the hospital. And I told him that I wanted to be a bat boy. They say, you know what? You need to be persistent. Give him a call again. So I did. And I got in contact with him. And he told me to come in for an interview. And I did. I was in ROTC in high school. I wore my dress blue ROTC uniform. And he sat me down. And he said, hey, you're going to be washing clothes, washing dishes, cleaning cleats, polishing cleats, cleaning up the locker room. Is this something you want to do? And I was like, yes. He said, okay, I'm starting you off part-time. So he started me off part-time as a bat boy for the Detroit Tigers. That was during the era of like Sparky Anderson was the coach. Mm-hmm. Then a few years later, he left and Celso Fielder, Alan Trammell, Lou Whitaker, Michael Doherty, if people follow baseball, it was during that era. And that was an amazing experience to be working around professional athletes at the age of 15.
That's so cool.
Yes. And then the following year, John Nelson called me. He said, hey, Barron, you want to come work on the visitor side? I was like, what's that? He said, the visitor side, where you all the teams that play against the Detroit Tigers. And I was like, yes. So I went over to the visitor side, which is even better because I got a chance to meet all the players that played against the Detroit Tigers. And I was there ever since. And that happened because of follow-up, because it's something I wanted to do because I didn't have an inside track. So I had to keep calling and figuring out a way to get in. I eventually did.
That is awesome. It is such a great story and a great, great lesson. I used to always think of, there was a line in, boy, I'm forgetting which book. Is it behind me on the shelf? It is somewhere in there. Yeah, here. This is, the cover's not on it, but this is Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. And right, one of his big lines is he just says, follow up or fail.
Follow up or fail.
So I think about that a lot, you know, and and then you realize that there's also tact and stuff with it. But anyway, these are really phenomenal lessons. I want to come back to the foundation, because one of the things I want to ask you is, you know, starting this, there's a lot of ways that people can give back. I imagine, you know, you were talking about how you have volunteers, for example, the different executives or people running the companies that come in. For you, why, and there are people that choose to, I would say, do it big, like start the foundation. Did you have any thoughts in just you yourself volunteering directly for like a Boys and Girls Club or something like that? Why was it important to you to start the foundation as opposed to maybe yourself just being a volunteer for another nonprofit?
That's a good question, Stephen. I started off being a volunteer for other organizations, like the Boys and Girls Club, where I was a mentor, Children of United Nations, where we worked with foster youth, where I would meet with a foster youth every week. I would drive down there, talk to them, take them to lunch, and go to different events with the foster youth. I started off as a volunteer. I was a volunteer for Operation Hope for financial literacy. So I started off as a volunteer, and then it merged into me opening up the Baron J Foundation with the support of my ex-wife, Yolanda. She was with me when I started the Baron J Foundation. And I always say, you know what? I don't think I'm in a position to give back right now. I think I need to be at a certain level before I give back. And that's not true. Someone once told me, hey, give back where you are. You don't have to wait until you get to a certain position. You can give back where you are. And I wanted to create a legacy, and I wanted to plant seeds. So I thought the best way to do that is to open up an organization and partner with the organizations that I was volunteering for. And that's what I did.
And what about, we work with, you know, organizations that are wide range of revenues, but we're starting to work with more and more and making Charity Charge accessible to brand new nonprofits. I mean, every day someone's, you know, in a situation like you were in years ago and saying, I want to start, you know, an organization and help in, you know, some sort of specific way. So I'm just curious for you, like reflecting back on when you started the organization to where you are today, what advice would you give to your younger self? I mean, what were some of the learning curves or things you sort of had to figure out maybe the hard way? And what sort of like advice would you give to someone that is starting a nonprofit today?
Okay. I guess I'll start with the first question first, Stephen. Something I would tell my younger self, and this was actually taught to me in a class from an instructor. She said, Baron, you need to partner with other established nonprofits in the area. That's what I would tell my younger self. And I think someone had told me that, and then I actually utilized that wisdom. So I reached out to other nonprofits that were more established and did partnerships with them. Not all of them wanted to do a partnership. Not everybody got back to me because they're like, okay, who are you? What are you doing? But once I started doing the work, when they said no, and then they wanted to partner. So sometimes I would tell someone, do not wait to partner or wait to get money to start doing the work. Start doing the work now with the resources and the money that you have right now. Because you have resources, you have time, and then also you have money. So you can start off with those resources. And when people in the community see what you're doing, then they're going to reach out and say, hey, I want to partner with you. Or when you reach out, they're going to want to partner because they see the work that you're doing in the community. And that's exactly what happened because I started doing the work. When I started doing the work and not counting on their support or help, then that's when they're like, oh, we want to partner with you. What was the second question? What would I tell somebody now? I think that's the question. Yeah. What would I tell somebody now that wants to start a nonprofit?
Yeah. I mean, you answered it, right? Okay. I want to go down this path a little bit because this is everything that I've seen up close and personal about my own social entrepreneurial experience of starting Charity Charge. You know, you can have, everyone's got ideas, right? Yeah. And it's all about the execution of actually doing it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, you know, if you want to be able to attract a worthy partner, you need to be worthy yourself, right? And so, Absolutely. And I also think too, it's the mindset of a lot of people or whatever, I mean, get hit up or asked for like to get involved, you know, in sort of early stage stuff. But once they actually see that the train is pulling out of the station, that they're going to miss out, they want to be a part of it. So I think that, you know, what you shared, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying to break it down and, you know, use this as a learning opportunity for myself. It's sort of two competing sides. I mean, one is find the organizations that you want to partner with and you can, and some of those may be willing to do it out of the gate, and that's great, and partner with them. And if not, don't take that rejection as the bad thing. Just go and be great yourself, and that's going to naturally attract them to actually want to follow through or return the phone call or do that with you, because they're going to see that, you know, you're a worthy partner.
Yes, Stephen, you broke it down. Excellent. You summarized it very well.
Thanks, man. You made me appreciate it. No, it's so true. It's so obvious, but I get a lot of people that reach out to me with different financial services or really even just credit card products. A lot of times they have nothing to do with nonprofits or charitable. It's just some idea for a credit card, and they see, hey, you started a credit card company. How do I do that?
Right.
And they're mostly always in just pure conceptual form. Like, they're not even taking some of the next steps to formalize it, right?
Yes.
And then there's been others where I've given a little bit of advice, and then they've gone and they've started to execute on it. Mm-hmm. And I want to help them even more, because I realize, wow, this is someone that actually is going to follow through and is following through.
Yes.
Absolutely. So it's true. And, you know, and I think that that's a really good point. Part of though, what comes up, I'm curious, like, if there's, to the extent you're comfortable sharing specifics, or just even with you now, I mean, I imagine different nonprofits reach out, you know, reaching out to you to partner and whatnot. One of the challenges, and this is, you know, something that I've seen head first, and then when I talk with people that run foundations that are, you know, in a grant making role, they're really challenged with the lack of collaboration amongst nonprofits. And there's a lot of nonprofits that don't want to collaborate, you know, and are very sensitive about their donors, about their programming, things of that sort. So what has been your experience just in general with organizations that don't want to collaborate? What do you think their rationale or reasoning is?
For nonprofits that do not want to partner with other nonprofits, yes. I believe that they are afraid that you might shine brighter than them.
Mm-hmm.
And also that you may take over some of their donors. Not that you intentionally trying to do it, it's just that their donors may like, oh, I really like what they're doing. Let me donate some money here. And they may feel like as if their donor or sponsors, by donating to you, they're taking money away from them. Which is could be the case and could not be the case, because sponsors have a pool of money they can share amongst many nonprofits. So I think it's a fear factor of nonprofits and scarcity mentality.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. And I think that we really need to change that as a whole, right? As I talk to different nonprofits, the term nonprofit industrial complex has come up, and it's sort of just this concept of all of these either misconceptions or inefficiencies that are happening in the nonprofit sector. And I just wonder about a world where there's harmony and there's not a sense of scarcity amongst people that are running nonprofit organizations, so that they can really fulfill and follow through on the mission. And so I think it's an important thing. I'm on your website right now. I'm on a section here that talks about your impact. Are there any certain like metrics or things, numbers, things that you're particularly proud of the work you have been able to do either in the past couple of years, you know, or kind of all in?
I think what I'm most proud about is that the mentors that are on our team, how they keep in contact with the students outside of the classroom, whether that's through email, text, phone, or taking them somewhere outside of their home, whether that could be to a game, to a salon to get a haircut. That's what I'm most proud about. Those type of interactions where students can actually have a figure that they can remember that was introduced to them by the Baron J. Foundation. Kind of similar to the two mentors from my high school who I was introduced to and how they kept in contact with me and took me under their wing.
Totally. That's awesome. Yeah. In closing this out, one of the things that's on a lot of nonprofits' minds and something that I've been really impressed with getting to know you is your ability to fundraise and your ability to create really strong relationships that have helped you in your marketing efforts. I even think about, you know, the billboard relationship that you've had and doing that. You've just been very out of the box and I think been very resourceful. So can you talk to us a little bit about your, you know, experience in the fundraising side and sort of advice you would give to, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned there that you might give, you know, advice to your younger self starting out about how to fundraise and you know, work with corporations or other supporters?
One thing I would tell my younger self is to attend several different nonprofit galas and dinners and mixers within your community or city. Because when you do that, you're going to meet the sponsors that sponsored those events. And usually the people that sponsored those events are going to be there that make the decision to determine who they're going to sponsor in the future. So you need to be seen at those type of events. That's what I would tell my younger self. And that also,
that's the first time I've ever heard that. It's brilliant. It's so basic, but yeah.
Well, it's so basic. I'm like, seriously? Wow.
I mean, it makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, if you want to meet a cute girl, some people might go to a yoga studio because that's where the cute girls are, because more women probably do yoga than guys. So you can go to a yoga studio if you want to meet a girl. So it just, you have to be in the environment of the company of the people that you want to meet. And yes. And also this right here, what I have on, you mentioned, this is called Tai Bo. This is a creation that I launched this year during COVID. And part of the proceeds benefit the Baron J. Foundation.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a great way for young men to wear something that's unique and they don't have to tie it because it's connected together and it goes around your neck. It's called Tai Bo.
That's awesome. What's the price point?
This is a luxury item. The price point is $149.
That's awesome. Do you sell them? Does it have its own URL or is that on its own?
It has its own URL, which is theoriginaltaibo.com. The original, O-R-I-G-I-N-A-L, Tai, T-I-E, Bo, B-O-W.com. Theoriginaltaibo.com. And then also we picked up the name realtaibo.com. So both of those domains would take you to the website, real, R-E-A-L, Tai, T-I-E, Bo, B-O-W.com. realtaibo.com or theoriginaltaibo.com. That's where you can pick up your item. If you don't wear it, it's 30 different selections. So if a person doesn't like it, they can give it away as a gift to someone special to them.
I'm pulling it up right now. I love your creativity, Baron. It's awesome. Also just in closing out here, for anyone that's listening, you can find more at baronjfoundation.org. Baron, what are other kind of closing messages you'd like people to know about getting involved, supporting your efforts, or any other message you'd like to share?
You can go to Baron, BaronJay.us, BaronJay.us, if you want to get involved with volunteering, in-kind donations, or doing some virtual mentoring for our students. Go to BaronJay.us, BaronJay.us.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. I was just trying to pull up the site there. I see it. You've got...
You did a typo?
No, you've got it on there. This is cool. I love, you have this, is this the whole thing with, Sow a Seed with BaronJ.com?
Yeah. Sow a Seed with BaronJ.com is, a landing page that will, that leads people to volunteer and also to, get involved with what we're doing. But yes, I thought you went to the original Tybo.com website.
Oh no. I mean, I had looked that up separately, so no, no worries, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on, doing a little episode here. And I wish you guys a ton of success and can't wait to be out there in LA whenever, you know, I'm allowed to travel next.
Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it. Thank you, Charity Charge.
All right.
Take care.